How handy are you? Thumbnails or black and blue, or completely comfortable with making things, but maybe don't have much space? You need a maker space. And luckily, more and more of them have been opening up around Australia in recent years. Some of them operate within schools or universities, but others are open to the public through a subscription fee. One new high-tech maker space has opened up in Melbourne's inner west, and there's quite a mix of people using it, from weekend tinkerers to new startups. Erica Voles visited to find out why people are being drawn to build and make things.
The entrepreneurial journey can be pretty lonely. One of the advantages of these spaces is to be in a community of like-minded people.
To be able to make things locally and reduce carbon footprint and being able to play in your own time is really, really valuable.
A lot of people, when they can see themselves learning, getting skills and seeing the results of their making, it's quite rewarding.
Even if they're just building a stool, everybody's got some innovative thing in the back of their mind that they want to get to one day.
I'm at Fab 9, which is a makerspace in Footscray in the inner west of Melbourne. Hobbyists come here, but about a quarter of the members are entrepreneurs. This place opened in June 2019 and was partially funded by the Victorian government. And really, it's following in the footsteps of makerspaces in other parts of Melbourne and Australia. Inside, it's a well-lit, large warehouse-style space. It's got a 3D printer, a computer-controlled cutting machine, woodworking benches, and nearby, two women are using a laser cutter to make some wooden badges. They are Lorianne Parker, who runs Science Play Kids, and Jess Wilson, who works with her.
I create science experiences for kids aged 2 to 12, and we try and make science as awesome as we can. And I got a couple of creatives that do some work with me, Jess, who's with me today, and we're hanging out at Fab 9 now using the laser cutter. We got the 3D printer in here, and so we're just trying to design our own science equipment.
So we're making some science badges, different strains of science like entomology, microbiology and whatnot. We're rastering it onto birch plywood with the idea that when the kids get these badges, they can write their name on them and say, hi, I'm a chemist in training, or hi, I'm a zoologist in training.
And we're just having a discussion because we've been using birch, 3mm birch ply, and it's got the grains, the natural grain in the wood on the top layer, and then it's got another layer underneath. And when we start to scratch off or laser burn off some of the layers, we're getting some of the darker stuff underneath that we don't want, which is affecting our picture. So we're just talking about how we can experiment and try some other materials and see what works best for our product, which is the ace thing about being here, is we just
you can try something and then do it again.
Do you want to come over here? We've got the machine running at the moment.
So this is the laser cutter. Yeah. Oh, wow.
And so you can see the dark lines that are coming up in some of those designs, and they're not what we're after.
Yeah.
So we're going to run this one a second time round and see if we use a different material, if we can cut out that variation. So we're just going to play around and see what works best.
Can I get you to say your name?
Muama.
You're working on an easel, I understand.
Yeah, that's right. It's great to have access to tools and you know, get your hands dirty and build things that you might use or give to your friends. For example, this easel, I'm making it for my friend. He started kind of like a party hire business, hiring things out for weddings. So these easels will be displayed at weddings to put boards on for customers to view their seating arrangements and that sort of thing. So that's one thing. I build things for me to use around the house. And the third thing is that I'm going to do is build prototypes for products.
Can you give me an idea of what they might be?
Accessories, car accessories, bicycle accessories. Yeah, I like transportation.
And so you're gluing some components of the easel together. And so it's just doing its thing while we're talking. What about the social aspect?
I like to chat to everyone, members as well as the staff. The staff are great when I have a question. For example, maybe 2 months ago I had no woodworking knowledge or experience at all.
Are you kidding me?
I promise. And basically I just hung out with Sam.
So Sam's one of the managers here?
Yeah, he's basically my teacher. He said, for that application, you should use this tool, or have you used it before? No, I haven't. I'll show you how to use it. And after he shows me, I do it myself. And they've taught me a lot, the staff.
Were you very handy before you came here?
No. I had a lot of skills in designing digitally, but not building. So now when I design, I'm a better designer, I would say, now.
This trend of creating spaces for people to make things is not just happening in Australia, but all over the globe. In fact, Dr. Shane Duggan from RMIT says Australia's a bit behind the curve on this. He's just returned from New York, where the maker movement is well established. But he says it's a movement that's growing here too.
There's a lot of these spaces starting to emerge, and the really difficult thing is tracking all of them, because they operate in so many different ways. Some of them operate out of schools, some of them out of TAFEs, some out of universities, and some, like Fab9, a bit more independently. So a report recently, sort of 2017, said that we're up around the sort of 60 mark Australia-wide, but I would hazard a guess that the number is actually much higher. It has definitely grown, and there's a number of reasons that that's been the case. And a lot of that has to do with the rise of online technologies and the rise of online spaces for creators to sell their products. More than anything else, it's gotten a lot cheaper because of things like Shopify and Etsy and so on, to set up a store and to just start selling. And so the barrier to entry is quite low nowadays. And really what that means on the maker side is that we need more of these sorts of spaces for people to be able to hone their skills and to make really high quality products. And ultimately, people who are starting out need support to really get a sense of what it takes to make good quality product and get it out into the world.
Back at Fab9, Lorianne Parker and Jessica Wilson are still fine-tuning their science-inspired kids' badges.
So it's a beautiful day out there. So I thought we might wander outside and get away from the fantastic and efficient, but nevertheless slightly noisy laser cutter.
We have extraction for everything here, so they've got to suck away any of the dust that comes from any of the machines and the smoke, so the fans are always going.
Well, it's kind of good for your lungs to suck away all the bad stuff.
It's important.
Yeah.
How long have you been coming here for?
We've only been coming to Fab9 for a couple of months. Science by Kids has always been making most of its own equipment and materials. Normally it's in the backyard. My husband helps me, but I do a lot of work with the drop saw and the sander in my own time, and my neighbours don't love it. So having access to Fab9 means you can come in, be as loud as you like, and make whatever you like. So we just fit Fab9 into whatever our gaps are. It's kind of like a hobby space where we get to do a bit of work, which is a pretty convenient and fun, makes it easy.
And you're making badges there that you give to kids. What other things do you make?
Oh, we're making test tubes, we make other science equipment. Because a lot of products are small, it's not safe for the younger kids, the 3, 4 and 5 year olds. Most electronic stuff has coin batteries, and we want to enable the exploration of those kind of concepts, electricity and energy and all that kind of stuff, but without using the small parts. So we try and make our own versions of stuff that's safer and easier to interact with for younger kids, but without taking the science away from it. Some people are doing it from a business perspective, and some people are doing it as a hobby, and that means there's lots of people at night, because they open Thursdays and Fridays after hours, I think till 9 or 10. And then we come in the mornings, it's often quiet, which means we can book whatever machines we like.
So it's a place where you can collaborate and you can get ideas from other people, have a bit of company. What about if, you know, there were IP issues? Like if you're coming up with a new way of doing something that you think is really commercially sensitive, is a space like this going to be maybe not for you, given that it's kind of very open?
I think it's okay. You book the machines so you have your own allocated time, and it's a big enough area that if you've booked the laser cutter, there's no one that would sit around near the laser cutter because they've got their space on the other side, and you can delete everything you use after you've cut. So no, I don't think it's an issue at all. You've got enough privacy, but you've got the social aspect of it when you want it and if you need it.
What is the social aspect of it like?
We've been to a couple of networking nights here. It's really interesting to meet people that, me personally, I don't think I would come across and run into and have conversations about creating and running a business and all those kind of things. So it's really nice to find like-minded people, but also have conversations, with people that I wouldn't run into at schools or at any other place. So that's, I think it's really good.
I head upstairs with Riley Richardson. She's one of the staff members. She's got a background in sculpture.
How do we get in? Sorry.
Is there a door here? Oh,
okay. And I'm heading upstairs to meet the person who started Fab 9.
Hi, my name is Hans Chen. I'm the founder and CEO of Fab 9. I was working in California. I was working for a company called SanDisk, a semiconductor company. While I was working in Silicon Valley, I discovered makerspace and maker movement. I was a member at a local makerspace called Tech Shop. It was Tech Shop San Jose, and I really enjoyed being part of a makerspace community.
Why start a space in Melbourne, and what was the kind of passion for the whole makerspace that also had an entrepreneurial element?
Right. I was looking for a city where there are many existing design and talents, and I discovered through my research that Melbourne is really kind of the design capital in Australia, and also because I have some friends who moved here from all over the world, I thought that Melbourne would be a good place to start.
I understand you've got one entrepreneur using your space to develop an electric motorbike, is that right?
So Dennis is the founder of Savic Motorcycle, and they design electric motorcycle. The parts are made overseas, partially in Taiwan, and they want to use our makerspace to assemble their first production bike. Now they're going to pilot production. So using our space for welding and assembly of the bike for him is the final fine-tuning his products. So yeah, so we have very diverse members in terms of entrepreneurs who try to do different products. Literally ranges from baby products to all the way to electric motorbike. So, but then people tap into this community to have shared resources. I think that's a good way to think about it. Shared resources could be machine, it could be knowledge, or it could be staff are helping them with specific process.
So with more makerspaces opening up around Australia and around the world, you might be thinking, sign me up. But there are some things worth considering. As with any community space, you'll need to be prepared to cooperate with others. That's with anywhere. But Shane Duggan at RMIT says if you're specifically wanting to chuck in your job and make some money rather than just make things for fun, well, you know, think carefully.
The risks, I suppose, are the same as the risks with any of these kinds of ventures, is that it might not work, it might not be a good idea, but also that, you know, really, when you're working in these sorts of spaces and you're earning money like this, you're not necessarily in the traditional labour market in terms of getting the benefits that come with employment, such as sick leave, annual leave, those sorts of things. Superannuation is another big issue, I suppose, for people who are working more in the gig economy and maker economy. So these are things that I think individuals need to take into account when they're thinking about trying these sorts of things.
And for some people, it might actually just be about going into a space, being mentored, having a crack at a hobby, but not actually about making lots of money, but just making things with your hands and tapping into a community.
Absolutely. I think it's really important, you know, to think about these sorts of spaces in terms of how they might contribute to the economy, but it's also really important to support them just for the community reasons and to have groups of makers coming together, being really excited about the things that they can create and to learn some new skills.
That's Dr. Shane Duggan from RMIT speaking with Erica Voles via Skype. And for more details about the rest of the voices you heard, head to the Life Matters homepage. I'm Hilary Harper. This is RN.